And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Good morning, good afternoon, whatever time of day it is that you are listening, folks. Thank you very, very much for listening. Day today is the 28th of February, year of our Lord 2023. Welcome to yet another edition of the Bunt and Cardigan Show, presented by The Athletic. I'm, of course, joined by the on-again, off-again man who wears the cardigan, James Edwards, the third of The Athletic. James, on the final day of February, with all due respect, I know this is a Pistons podcast, but can we just spend 30 seconds on Damian Lillard scoring 71 points in a game? I mean, I just want to throw this out there.
The Rockets are maybe the worst defensive team I've ever seen in my life.
I'm assuming you're referencing the graphic that showed, like, all of the dudes who have gone off this year. You can read it if you can pull it up in front of you.
Let me see if I can find... But go ahead and do your spiel while I look it up.
So what I was going to say was I didn't watch this game in real time. I box score watched at the end, and then I watched a supercut of it after. And the really quick note that I wanted to say was I saw Kevin Knox just had like a solid cardio day, zeros across the board. And then I realized the timeline of the Kevin Knox thing for me has been 8 months ago, me being like, is Troy Weaver a bad GM because he just signed my least favorite player in the NBA, to Kevin Knox, without him being on our team, doesn't get us James Wiseman because he was in the deal. Now, you could argue that any old bench player could have been thrown in at any moment and, you know, we would have been able to make that deal happen. But Kevin Knox, thank you. You got Damian Lillard 71 and you got the Pistons James Wiseman. So, good day.
Yeah, I mean, I love how you want to spend 30 seconds on Dame Lillard, but it turned into 30 seconds on Kevin Knox. That's you. It's peak you.
That did, I guess that did come off as like some hater behavior.
It's all right. Haters gonna hate. Go ahead. All right, these are the top performances against the Rockets this season. Dame Lillard 71, Luka 50, Lauri Markkanen 49, John Morant 49, LeBron 48, Giannis 44, Anthony Edwards 44, Trey 44, SGA 42, Clay 42, Clay 41. Now, that's terrible. But in Houston's defense, no pun intended.
No pun intended. Nice.
Those are all like the best players in the league.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, but it's one of those things. I was on a Zoom, family Zoom the other day, and I was kind of going off about the league. Because, like, I don't mean to sound like a boomer or like lame, but doesn't it kind of. Man, I'm off to a hater start in this episode.
Bad.
But, like, when you have transcendent guys, you know, walking around, there's like three of them in any game that you might watch. Doesn't it just kind of take the luster out of all these performances that we're seeing? Because I love great basketball, and ultimately that's what we're seeing, is just a historical amount of great basketball this season. And I would also say that the idea that defense isn't being played, I think that's a lazy take.
Yes.
I think it's just the shot-making ability is just off the charts, but it just makes it so hard to appreciate it. You know what I mean? When these dudes are just growing on trees now. Does that make sense?
No, I agree with that. I think the scoring outpours are not as big of a deal as they once were. Mm-hmm. How many guys have scored 70 this year? Two? Dame and Donovan?
And Donovan Mitchell, yeah.
It's like in any other, like, there was a, when Devin Booker did it, his team lost and there was a celebration. You know what I mean? Like, it's certainly lost its luster. I agree with that. I think that is more of an indictment on how hard it is to play defense in this league, how advanced offense has become, and how advanced players in general have become. So I'm here for it. I like it. Obviously, I think there needs to be a little tightening of rules to help defense, or maybe let's shorten the court, psych. But it's certainly I understand what you're saying.
Are you a proponent of, like, eliminating the corner three? Or is that a total goof on you, or by you?
I don't know. I wouldn't do that.
if I can just throw out one more thing that made me mad from the last week, we just had the All-Star game. I get that it went two overtimes, but combining for like 250 points in a single basketball game is not fun to me. That's insane. And like that first quarter that was the Kings, I don't remember who they were playing, but it was the Kings game. It was De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk.
Kings
and it was
Clippers.
Like Kings Clippers. 177, 174, whatever that ended up being. What in the world? What are we doing? What's going on? The All-Star game was like 3 days before that. I thought we kind of got that out of the way.
Yeah, but we have to remember that there was a game in the 80s, Pistons involved, that had 180 points.
No, I know. It was the Nuggets, right?
Yeah, Pistons, Nuggets. Or was it 90s? 80s, 90s, one of those two. I think 80s, 86 or something. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not fun, but like there was elite shot making in that game. I don't know. I think there's a way to tone it down a bit, but I also think the league, as much as people complain online, far more people are I think enjoying it, and
enjoying
the younger generation, the guys and gals who are 17 and under are really, I think, taking a liking to the availability of, well, I don't know if that's the best word, but the plethora of talent that this league has to offer.
Yeah, a lot of really great social media breakout clips from every single game in a lot of these instances. So today is going to be a mailbag episode. Before we get to that, like two more things to cover. James, you got a story that you want to promote.
Mock draft season. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, on Monday, I dropped the first Piston-centric mock draft of the year. With March Madness coming up, Overtime Elite playoffs are in, I think, the swing of things are about to be. Euro Cup is about to be in the final soon. I thought this was a good time to kind of do the way too early first mock draft for the Pistons. And so I did four tankathon spins, four different scenarios. The Pistons did not land number one in any of those scenarios. Kids, I should have told you to plug your ears before, but too late now. So, yeah, if you're trying to get familiar with names outside of Victor Wembanyama, give it a read, check it out, because I go into depth about why I think who might make sense for Detroit at what pick, and why they fit and things like that. So go ahead and check that out on The Athletic.
Or if you want to learn more about guys that aren't Victor Wembanyama, you can also, through the same app, by the way, listen to last week's pod when we jumped into a bunch of those dudes.
Do both at the same time.
You could, theoretically. And I allegedly jumped the gun on my Chris Murray propaganda. How did that Michigan State game go, James? How'd that go?
Well, I wasn't able to watch it, but that was shocking. I wanted to know the last time Michigan State scored 100 in regulation.
Yeah, that was 100%. 100% agreed.
I'd be curious.
Second thing, last thing before we get to the mailbag, I goofed on you before we started today's episode. You're playing hooky, not in Charlotte. Taking a little rest, but I give you a lot of credit because this is only like the second road trip that you've not gone to, right?
I would say a few more than that, but yeah, no, I've done a lot of road trips this year.
So my question to you is, and I'm not saying that you were doing this to like disrespect Charlotte in any way,
no.
But what is the criteria for like how you dictate what games and what road trips you are and are not going to go on?
Yeah, well, number one is it a one-off? I really don't do one-offs because I don't write a ton of game stories. I mean, obviously I do if a situation calls for it, but I'll do one-offs like leading up to the deadline in January and February because you just never know what can happen. But after that, it's kind of like, what's the point in me going to Charlotte on a Monday? The teams have a combined 34 wins. I'm glad I didn't go based on the Pistons' injury report. And, yeah, it just doesn't – there's just not much sense. I've been on the road a lot the last few weeks. There's just no point. I won't be in Cleveland on Friday. They have a one-off in Cleveland on Friday. There's no point in going to that. the big things that decide for me is like, multiple-day road trips. So I try to – if they're going to be gone for at least 2 days, I usually do those trips because they'll usually have I mean, if they're gone 2 days, it's usually 3 days. But I usually try to go to road trips where they have at least one game and at least one or two practices and a shoot around just to get availability, to be able to talk to guys. It just makes sense. And guys are a little more less eager to be on the move on the road than they are at home because they don't have anywhere to go on the road. So you get, in my experience, I get better stuff on the road. So as long as it's not a one-off, I'm usually going. I'll be going on the trip at the end of March. But if it's a one-off past the All-Star break, past the trade deadline, they would have to be a playoff team or in contention for me to do that.
or Miami?
I wish. I'd probably do the Miami.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah. That's an interesting way to put it. I've never really thought about it. Like, when these dudes are on the road, it's like, well, I might as well talk to James. I don't have anything else to do. That sounds disrespectful. You know how I mean.
No, but I mean, like, in the locker room home games, like, they got families.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They have their homes 10, 5, 20 minutes away. Like, they want to get home most of the time. Like, obviously, there are guys that are lingering. It's often, but they're a little bit more relaxed. They're likely to get more shots up. They're likely to take their time to get dressed. They take a team bus from the arena back and forth. So it's like they can't really go until everybody's ready to go. You know, there's just not as big of a rush.
Do you want to spend a quick 2 minutes, if that, before we get to the mailbag today? Jaden Ivey and Marvin Bagley were playing super, super aggressively against Toronto. And I had an unbelievable amount of fun watching them both play. I think it might have been the most fun I've had watching that duo play all year.
Well, Bagley hasn't really played, but yeah.
Well, right.
I thought Ivy was much better, and I thought he was really good. I thought he was good in Toronto, but I thought he was better against Orlando. I wrote that story afterward where it's just like kind of just the beauty of time and letting guys figure it out, and just his assist, his playmaking, the development you see in the mid-range from three, like he's getting better month by month. And with that being said, check out the mock draft because I talk about what happens if the Pistons get number two. So check that out. And then Marvin just came back like he didn't miss a beat, dominating the Raptors on the glass, finishing, doing what he does, left-hand finishes. I think that was the first time, even though they lost, I think that was kind of the first time you see the vision with having the big guys and having multiple big guys to use. Toronto struggled to score inside. They struggled on the glass. I think the Pistons got it tied a season high for 62 rebounds, and that was without Duren. And I think Isaiah only played two quarters because he left the game with an injury. Defensively, you just see what length does. And even though they may not necessarily block shots, just being there as disruptors goes a long way. They held the Raptors. They lost the game, but still held the Raptors to under 100 points. And in today's NBA, as we talked about earlier, that is hard to do. I remember I was talking to Dwayne the other day. I was like, in today's, like, with the scoring output now, like, are you fine if a team scores 110? He's like, yeah, if the team scored 110 a couple of years ago, you were furious. Now it's like that's the new 100. It's just crazy how that is.
Which kind of ties into what we were talking about at the top of this, honestly, with just the sheer talent that's in the league right now.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. The shot creation and shot making is as good as it's ever been. So, yeah, shout out to Marvin. Good return. Didn't look like he missed a beat. He hurt his hand, so he was able to stay in shape and stuff, but there's still difference between running on the treadmill and riding the bike and playing in a basketball game, but he looked like he didn't. He had been on his P's and Q's when it comes to that. So he was really, really good. And the next day at practice, Dwayne he made the joke he always talks about. He's like, well, Marvin told on himself. He got 18 rebounds. There's no reason he can't do something similar to that more regularly. So
yeah,
he set the bar high. Let's see what he does in Charlotte. You'll know what he does in Charlotte by the time you're listening to this, but let's see if he can carry that over.
The most shocking thing about watching that game, final note, is I was watching the Raptors broadcast, and the color commentator had a really hard time figuring out how to pronounce Duren. And then when the play-by-play guy gave him confirmation, he was still skeptical. He was like, all right, like, I'm going to roll with it. I'm going to roll with Duren. But he was, like, sure that it was Duren or something.
Duren.
That was pretty
baffling. Not only does Isaiah's Livers' dunk is certainly the best Pistons dunk this season. There's no question about that. That was vicious on Jakopodl. Sneaky contender for top five dunk in the whole NBA. That had everything you want. Cutting, getting downhill, jumping from a distance, throwing it down over a big guy, hand touching rim. It wasn't like the Blake Griffin, Dwight Howard toss in. Like he yammed it. Everything you want in a poster dunk it had. Force, excitement, time score situation. I think that's up there I'd have to go back and look, but I think that's a top five dunk this year.
Yeah, as long as you're not saying that it was the best, I think I would probably agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to think about it. I didn't want to say that, and then I remembered somebody yammed on somebody. I'm like, oh, all right. But yeah, I'm going to say it's a top five poster of the year so far.
Ja had one earlier this year that I think may have been number one. You mentioned this, and you mentioned the idea of somebody being a sneaky good or whatever at something. I had a segment that we were going to do today. I started writing it up during the Raptors game. And while, without going into the context of what the segment was supposed to be or anything, it led to this take. Because Precious Achiuwa also had a great dunk in that game. And here's what I wrote.
And so did Isaiah Precious Achiuwa. Yeah.
Yes. Precious, I can't say this. There's too many C's and H's.
I hate watching him play, by the way. Go ahead.
Precious Achiuwa is a flyer. Full Philadelphia. One of those sneaky Jeff Green potential guys for posters well into his 30s. Maybe I'm crazy. Thoughts? You like that take?
I think you're crazy because you took notes on Pistons Raptors in late February about Precious Achiuwa.
Hold on, okay.
Yeah.
I guess it'll make sense if I just explain why I did that. The segment was called, because I'm not on the internet anymore, I don't tweet things, but you used to like my tweets. So the segment was called, Would James Like the Tweet? And I just wrote down observations throughout the game.
Things that I
would have tweeted had I still been online, and would have, and then I was going to read you each statement and you would tell me if you would have liked the tweet or not. So would you have liked that Precious Achiuwa tweet?
No, because I don't like Precious Achiuwa, but can we play that next week?
Maybe.
All right.
I'll have to make sure that there's actually some good ones. I'll just say the I only had one other one before I ditched the segment because I was like, this is only funny because I'm on Saturn right now. I wrote, Hamidou Diallo, holy smokes, his arms are toasters.
Toasters?
Didn't like that one.
What are, like, toasters, like, what you put Pop-Tarts in and bagels?
I kept trying to make that happen, like, a year ago. Whenever a dude was, like, on fire, when he, like, couldn't miss,
yeah,
or when he, you know, he went on a tear, I was like, his arms are toasters, and it just never stuck. People just didn't like it.
That's funnier said than read.
I think it's the other way around.
His arms are toasters? I would initially think you're talking about, like, the size of his arms.
With Hamidou Diallo, I'd say his shoulders are about the width of an average toaster.
Your perception of Hamidou Diallo's physique is shocking.
Fun media day concept. Throw some toasters next to some dude's arms. Jalen Duren would have the biggest. He would be the closest to a toaster, probably. What the hell are we talking about?
I don't know. Toasters
aren't that big. We're going to jump into the mailbag this week. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break. Take a word from a sponsor.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Alrighty, James, do you want to start this mailbag off with a 105-mile-an-hour Joel Zamaya fastball?
I mean, do I have a choice?
I think it's a good question to start with.
All right, let's do it.
Hey, guys. Thank you for doing these mailbags. Question. The young core has not yet shown that they know how to win basketball games, so why should fans believe that a free agent or another rookie from this upcoming class are going to help this team take a step to competing for a play-in spot next season, even with Cade coming back?
I mean, that's kind of just like the story of evolution. OKC hadn't shown to win with their guys, and they're on the fringe of the play-in. It's the power of having a top 20 player in the league, which obviously Pistons fans hope Cade can be that or somebody else, but Cade is the most likely. I think it's maturity. You learn to win games. I know it's hard to tell now, but like, they've had a lot of nail biters as of late. I shouldn't say a lot, but they've had a few nail biters as of late. They're honestly, the only thing that's been holding them back from a couple wins the last few weeks is just mind-boggling turnovers. They've cleaned up a lot of stuff. I think they've looked better defensively in spurts. So Yeah, I get what you're saying, but I think that's just kind of the nature of the NBA. Steph Curry and the Warriors didn't know how to win until they started winning. Same with,
well, until his ankle stopped getting sprained.
Well, that too, yeah, but they weren't, yeah, they were a team in flux for a little bit. Same with the Bucks. It just kind of happens naturally. I think that's just how things go as long as you get talented players.
Those Warriors-Clippers series, back when the Clippers had their number every year, whether it was like Christmas Day or the playoffs or something, those were the days. Like when they weren't the Warriors yet, what you're talking about right now, when they hadn't figured it out yet and they hadn't gotten over that hump.
Yeah, Monte Ellis, Steph Curry backcourt days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you think about when like Steve Blake was there, or you think about when the Bucks were, you know, losing to Toronto. And I guess it's different because we're also talking about a team that they're only losing these playoff series in like a semi-deep playoff run. You know what I mean? We're still waiting to get to the playoffs. So I guess maybe those are tough examples for me to dive into.
But we've talked about my tweet for a while. Like the Warriors didn't make the playoffs till like Steph's fourth year or have a 500 record till then. Same with the Bucks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Phoenix didn't learn how to win until they hit the bubble, and then they won 8 in a row and haven't looked back since. Like it's just sometimes it just clicks. And obviously Detroit is hoping it clicks sometime between now and the start of next season.
Next question. Huge fan of the show.
Have listened since day one
and look forward to every episode. My question is,
we should get like sorry to interrupt you. We should get like a, for those, don't roll your eyes. We should get a sounder for people who say they listened since day one, like bing, like a.
Ooh, I got something for that. We can debut it in the next episode. I have the perfect gimmick for it.
Cool. Don't roll your eyes at me. That was rude.
We know that 2023 is supposed to be the summer where Troy and his team take a big step forward. But what does a potential summer for the Pistons look like? I do not see many star free agents, especially defensive forwards, which the Pistons lack. If the Pistons do not get the number one pick, is trading their pick and quote-unquote stuff, unquote, for a real player to put next to Cade a possibility, or even Ivy and quote-unquote stuff if we get number two and draft Scoot? And James, since I feel like you've kind of had to hammer this one home for a while, can I give a quick take on this, and you can just say, you know, whatever you think about it?
Please.
I think it's what we've talked about, especially in the last few weeks, where one of the questions that we got a lot for this mailbag was, it was something to the effect of, will the Pistons entertain the idea of trading whatever pick they end up getting? First of all, because this is a few part question here, my first take on that is like, the NBA just isn't really a league that moves around those top picks that often. You know what I mean? And especially in a year like this, I just think that the ransom that it would require probably just isn't really going to fit the bill for most teams. And so because of that, you know, people are like, what's the best player you can go get for number two? I don't know. Could you get Jaylen Brown if you know that Scoot Henderson is going to Boston? I don't know. But that's not really the conversation here. Because
kind of is.
I think it is and it isn't. Because I think the real strategy here would be, do the draft. Do whatever you're going to do in the draft. Let it play out how you want it to play out. And then see what the remainder is. Right. So if you end up with Scoot Henderson and you're thinking, well, now we kind of have a logjam on both ends of the floor, right? In the 4-5 spot and then in like the 1-2 spot. We just got a lot of guys here. So you just look at the remainder of whatever you have. Or, I mean, you could just do the Brandon Miller thing, which we did get a few questions about that. Do we want to make a statement, or do we want to just let that one play out? What's going on?
We don't make a statement on Brandon Miller. Yeah.
Well, I just mean because we established ourselves as a Brandon Miller pod a week ago.
We are a Brandon Miller on the court podcast, yes.
Okay, cool. We'll roll with that. Right, so the odds are that you're going to end up with a player that kind of leaves a few guys in the weeds here. So the free agency part of this is tough because they're right. It's like Jeremy Grant, great. Love it. Love that idea. But other than that, it doesn't really seem like a ton of guys, especially these defensive specialists. I'll just throw this in. I won't read the question, but a beautiful emailer did throw out the name Grant Williams. Does that appease you at all?
It sounds like Grant wants to get paid. I wouldn't pay Grant $20 million a year.
But we're going to pay Jeremy Grant like $25 million?
Yes.
Yeah, that make, I guess, $5 million in difference for a guy who scores a lot and defends. Yeah, okay, yeah I'm wrong.
And isn't
but what, I'm a little scatterbrained here, but am I kind of on the right path? That you just
I love
wait
you, but
for
I would
the
say
draft
no.
to happen.
I would say no. I would say no.
To which part? Like to what? Of to all of it?
Yeah, almost all of it.
Okay.
I'll tell you why. I think if they get number two, not only do I think is there a serious internal discussion between Scoot and Brandon, but I think if they land on Brandon Miller, they trade back, get stuff, and still get Brandon Miller. You forgot about that one, yes. You're very excited, but you're mouthing instead of...
I'm mouthing it because I don't want to be vulgar, but heck yes, dude.
So I think that is a possibility. I think there's a possibility if they really, really, really like Scoot, take Scoot. Jaden is looking really good, and teams like Jaden a year ago, so they probably like him even more now. See what that gets you if you want. Or, like you said, maybe just take Scoot and just figure it out. But I certainly think that if the Pistons land two, I think there will be a serious discussion about moving it. And I also would say, and please don't aggregate that. That's just my feeling. I haven't talked to anybody about that. It's just my feeling based on the situation. Them having still owing a first round pick, like they need to maybe add another first or two or three, like recoup some stuff. And I think that's a way to do it. If you believe in Ivy, at the end of the day, if you believe in Ivy, I think there's going to be a lot more chatter, assuming Brandon Miller stays out of trouble off the court. I think there's going to be a lot more chatter from here on out about Miller going too. I think there's going to be more chatter. I think the Victor stuff's going to happen, but like, you know how every year, like, it's like, we all think this guy's number one, and then it like gets going and it's like, oh, this guy could be number one. This guy could be number one. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to happen with number two this year. So with that said, I think that there is a world in which Detroit trades their pick if it's not number one. And I will also say, when it comes to cap space, I think people should remember again that cap space just doesn't mean free agents. You can utilize the cap space to take on contracts and trades and things of that sort. So, there are options. They're going to have to do some wizardry. And I think at the end of the day, their life becomes a lot easier if they land pick one or two. I would say actually one, two, or three. And if it's anything after three, I think you have to really hope that Cade comes back and is the man next year.
The gears are kind of spinning here. Maybe they are. I don't know. Maybe I need some WD-40 or something. But if I'm Phoenix, I just traded for Kevin Durant. I just took on a lot of money. God, that Chris Paul contract, God, that's a lot of money. That Devin Booker contract, God, that's a lot of money. That Ayton contract, God, that's a lot of money. Do I look at Detroit, who just drafted Victor Wembanyama? No. It wouldn't be Victor Wembanyama. It would be the remainder of Scoot, Cam Whitmore, Brandon Miller, whoever it ends up being. And I see, like, Marvin Bagley's playing pretty well. Do you cut costs? Detroit has the money to do it. Do you go get DeAndre Ayton? What do you think?
No, not Ayton.
Why not?
Because they already have three centers. Like, they don't need, like, another Ayton type. Like, I'd rather just have, like, I'm not trying, like, I wasn't trying to make that. Like, I'd rather have, for the price, I'd rather just see what Wiseman and Durin are. You know what I mean? Like, if you're talking about Devin Booker, yeah, you have that conversation. But Phoenix just traded for Kevin Durant. They're not trading Devin Booker.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I'm just thinking because I thought the Ayton piece was – it's the same thing. I was watching the Toronto game, and I'm looking at OG Anunoby shooting free throws. I'm like, God, you're still there? How did that happen? I'm looking at DeAndre Ayton like, you're still there?
If you get pick three – actually, let's do this. You get pick two.
Doing a tankathon spin?
No. Let's say you get pick two. Okay. Would you trade pick two for Mikal Bridges, an extra first or two, and another player?
Where can I cherry pick where the firsts are coming from? Because I would rather have the Houston ones,
like that they own. Let me see what the picks.
Wait, no. I have that reversed. Houston owns Brooklyn's firsts. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And if you look at the ones that they have, I feel like it's like Phoenix picks aren't going to be that great.
But you're getting like Mikal Bridges.
No, 100%. I don't need to fixate on where the. You're right.
And you have extra picks to trade.
I would do it for McCallum two firsts. Yeah. Not one, though. It has to be at least two.
All right.
Because isn't that the question? Is like, if you are crazy enough of a GM, right, and you really want to put it all on the table and make your stamp, make your mark on the draft and your franchise, and you even consider shopping that first pick, like, does it have to be like a Rudy Gobert type deal? I don't think it would be, what was it, like five firsts? I don't think it would be as many picks, but it's going to be a lot of picks, right?
Yeah, assuming everybody views Shea in that light. Or not Shea, what the hell? Scoot.
Shea, what the hell?
Scoot in that light.
No, I'm talking about number one. So Victor.
Oh, Victor's not getting traded. No, he's trading.
No. And that's what I'm saying is, like, you can't trade the first pick, but let's just assume
you could shop that pick. I mean, you can. It's just a matter of, like, what's the haul? Like, there's a haul that I would do it.
That's what I'm asking.
I just don't know what it is. I would know it if I saw it.
Is it Rudy Gobert? That package? No, bigger, not Rudy Gobert himself, but you think it's worth, like, what, six first-round picks?
And
because we can't have it both ways. We can't have it both ways. No, we can't, because we can't be talking about how we're worried about Victor Wembanyama because, like, are we sure? Like, are we sure about the weight? I know you all saw that
nobody's
Jonas Valanciunas, Steven Adams type putting his ass in the basket the other day. Like, you know what I mean? So we can't be concerned about him in all these ways and be just as a you and me. I'm talking about you and me, not anybody else.
But we're also saying that every team who has number one is taking him. So it's not like the same thing. You know what I mean? Like, he's going number one, regardless of who's picking him. They're going to roll the dice. I think because of the lack of – he'll be on a rookie deal, which Gobert wasn't.
Yeah.
He's potential to be as good as Gobert defensively, but freaking maybe KD on offense.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say that. It's disrespectful to KD, but
yes, that's not true, but yeah, you're right.
A hybrid forward big on offense, I think you definitely get more than what Utah got for Gobert. No question. I wouldn't settle for anything less.
I just can't really wrap my head around that because I kind of thought we already reset the trade market. But let's move on to another question. This was one of those I told you there was a lot of questions that were kind of in the same vein, so I'm just going to kind of boil it together. Let's spend 5 minutes speculating about coaching stuff, okay? Because if there's anything that I like to do on this show, it's setting precedents, right? Like, when we did our trade deadline primer, I was like, James, can we just set a precedent for people out there that if the Pistons do make a trade this year, meaning that week for the deadline, mm-hmm. it's probably going to be for something that, like, we don't really care about. And, like, it's not going to be that fun. That ended up not being true at all. So I'm 0 for 1 so far. But let me just set a precedent here. That I feel like when the Pistons do officially amicably part ways with Dwayne Casey, whether it's at the end of this year or probably at the end of next year when his contract is up and he assumes that cozy front office position and people are looking at all the names that are on the market, doesn't it just kind of feel like that it's going to end up being one of those things where they go with like the Rex Kalamian of the world? You know what I mean? Like that guy that's not like Atlanta just got Quinn Snyder. And in any other year, if it was any other Detroit sports team, I would maybe feel some type of way about that. Like a big name going off the board, a guy who is a proven winner in the regular season in the NBA, right? I would be like, that's the guy that I want coaching my team. But I just don't really have this expectation that Brad Stevens is walking through that door or like, you know, a guy like Quinn Snyder. Like I just feel like it's going to be one of those, you know, front of the bench guys, similar to if Ben Johnson, Lions OC, had taken a head coaching position this year, it's kind of the new kid on the block. And if you know guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like Jordan Brink will probably get an interview, right? And I hope he gets the job. That's who I would be rooting for, of course. But is that where you think it's heading, that it's going to be for a name that we may not be totally familiar with?
Good question. And these are the culmination of questions asked. Is that what you're saying from the mail, from readers? Or
yeah,
listeners?
Just a lot of coaching questions. Yeah, so I figured we can just spend 5 minutes on it.
I think a name that kind of fits what you're saying is Charles Lee from Milwaukee. He has been a front of bench guy for Bud for a while, youngish. I think he's interviewed for a couple jobs. I think he interviewed for the Atlanta job. I think that's somebody that is certainly going to be on the radar when and if that time comes. I mean, I just think it depends. Also, kind of just depends on where the team is. Like, if assuming Dwayne starts next season as the head coach and this team makes the playoffs and surprises some people, like maybe you either keep Dwayne or continue to have a veteran coach. You know what I mean? Like if they're showing that they're about there, maybe that changes things. But in terms of just like the profile of coach, I think, yeah, like somebody like Charles Lee, youngish, has experience with under successful organizations. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to pluck maybe from college. I've said maybe they make calls about Jay Wright, see what he's up to. Juwan Howard, if his kids are gone by the time Dwayne hangs it up. Who else is a name? Maybe your buddy Sean Sweeney.
Oh my God, I'd lose my mind. Oh my God, season tickets. Are you kidding me? Sean Sweeney as the head coach. I was in the, you know what, if we want to talk about one of those like sort of front of the bench guys that finally got a job and spent like 3 years interviewing. I mean, you mentioned Charles Lee being a Budenholzer guy. Darvin Ham was a coach that for a while I was like, I could really get on board with that and get on board with him as my coach. What about like you draft Brandon Miller? What if you poach Nate Oates?
No.
What do you think about? No. What has he done? What's his deal? I don't know.
Well, his handling of this current situation hasn't been great.
It's been weird. It's definitely been confusing.
And I'd also just know stuff in terms of people who have had interactions with him that is just not, I don't think, in line with the Pistons organization. Gotcha. So I'll just leave it at that.
Does Tom Crean still have a job? I think Georgia fired him, actually, a while ago.
You are sick. You want to get Izzo, too?
Respectfully, no. No. I remember, though. I remember watching. I am old enough to remember watching Big Ten Network when he had a press conference where he was like, I am not taking the Cavs job. Yeah. I remember that.
He almost left for Atlanta, the Cavs, and I think there was one more team he almost left for. Well,
I thought it was the Cavs twice. It
probably was the Cavs twice, but I know Atlanta was. He almost went to Atlanta, too, a few years ago.
My brain is so big right now. I just realized this. I'm sure everybody was able to piece this together at the time, Dan but I was Gilbert. Like 10. It's because of Dan Gilbert. Whoa.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone's sitting in their cars everybody, in traffic on the way to work. Like,
I think everybody older than you already knew that. So you just helped out your age and younger, yes.
I was thinking about, I'm not going to go on a Keith Nichol rant right now. What do you say we get to the next question, James? I got a Keith Nichol spiel that I've been waiting to get off for like a few days now. I've been thinking about talking to you about it.
Let's wait till the end. We can get your Keith Nichol thing off. Yeah.
So this one's a little more long-winded. I think it's a fun question, though. It's a little less like quote-unquote serious, but it pertains to your job, James.
Bring it.
Cool.
Jabroni.
Hi, Nick and James. OG listener and lifelong Piston fan from London, Ontario here. Ooh, I have a question about miscellaneous skills. Allow me to unpack. As part of my work, I take people's IDs and essentially guess how to pronounce their name every day. Being a lifelong fan of the NBA, I am elite at correctly guessing the pronunciation of names from other cultures. Spanish names, Lithuanian, Polish, French, Nigerian. At least a couple times a month, I get a remark like, that's the first time somebody's ever said my name right on the first try. Excuse my small flex.
I bet he works for customs. Excuse. He either works for customs or he has his own liquor store.
I guess if he's in Ontario, he definitely might. It is literally only decades of knowing NBA. It is literally only from small decades. I can't read this. It is literally only from decades of knowing NBA rosters and having to pronounce names like Valanciunas or I don't know how to pronounce this one or Jerebko, Wembanyama, Diakite that I am really, really good at. I'm curious if your time covering or just admiring the NBA has given either of y'all any miscellaneous life skills that you'd like to disclose to the people. Really struggled to read that one. Sorry about that, everybody. You got any weird skills that the NBA covering the NBA has given you? How are you with names?
It's a good question.
I'm pretty
good. It took me a while. I have more issue like typing names out. Like I used to just call Svi, but I can say Mihailuk.
I got really good at spelling that at his name. His full name, his government name.
I just got lazy. Oh, Sviatoslav.
Sviatoslav, yeah.
I just used to copy and paste Mihailuk into tweets and stuff. It was just I didn't bother even trying to figure out how to spell it, but I could pronounce it.
I'm loving the honesty.
Yeah, no, I'm talking. I mean, I couldn't. I don't know how many I's, how many Y's. It was a lot. I always tell young journalists this, and I guess it's not necessarily like a sneaky trait, but it's, I think, if not the most important trait you need to have, but the second most important trait you need to have to do this job is, like, you have to be able to, like, relate to people, man, and be a people person, and be able to hold conversations and things like that. Like, you have to really be a people person. You can't be, it forces you to come out of your shell. You can't be shy and do this job well.
So your superpower, your special talent is that you're a really good guy? What the fuck? What do you mean?
I'm not. No. I'm saying.
Sounds awesome.
You got to be able to
do that.
You got to be able to hold conversations with people, even if it means looking something up about a player and like asking them about it, or a play in a game, just to like build that relationship and rapport. And sometimes you have small talk conversations, make them worthwhile. Like, it's just, you have to really, you're around these guys so much, and you ask them personal questions. You get to, I mean, heck, you're, in many instances, you're around like their families and stuff. Like, it is a, it's a people business for sure at the end of the day. And you have to be able to hold conversations. I think that goes a long way. But like, I'm trying to think of like random.
What you're telling people is to get in their Nardwar bag.
Yeah,
do some
that's a
digging,
good one.
Learn something about somebody.
That's a good,
you know,
one,
I mean?
Yeah. Be able to hold a conversation. That's good. The Nardwar bag.
I think I've gotten pretty good at name pronunciation. The last player that I can vividly remember like having trouble with was actually Sekou, because there was because at the time that he got drafted, people were saying it 10 different ways, both his first and his last name. So I didn't really know. And I remember I was like the correspondent, the Pistons correspondent for an ESPN radio station in Ohio. And there was like a 3-week span where they would have me on once a week to like chop it up about the Pistons. And I still have the tape of it. And it's really cringy to go back and listen to, because I kept calling after the draft happened, I kept calling him Sekou. And to hear myself doing that is really, really cringe. But since then, I've been good at it. Wembanyama's not that hard.
When was the last time you had to say Sekou's name?
I type it a lot these days.
I don't
say it verbally. But as far as skills that I've picked up from actually watching the league, I don't know that I really have any, because the only like weird, unique skill that I can think of that would pertain to this in any way doesn't have anything to do with basketball, and it's really weird. So it's a great question. I just don't really have an answer off the top of my head.
I don't either. If I think of something, I'll come back. But that's a good question. I'll have to think about it a little bit.
Mine is, just for posterity, I can feel when a TV is on. I can be anywhere in the house, anywhere in the apartment. If you put me in a 2-story house, put me as far away from the TV as you can, turn the volume all the way down, I can tell you if the TV is on or off.
I can do that. I can do that too. I think that's more like a, I think there is.
Is that just a thing?
I think there's something to that, yeah. I think.
Oh.
Like an energy.
Don't tell me that. Don't tell me that, because I don't want people, I don't want those emails being like, oh, you can do that too, because then I won't feel special. I don't want to hear that.
I always felt I was alone with that, but.
It's just us. It's only you and me on this podcast.
That's why we were brought together.
That's why we do it.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture-themed trophies for six basketball-related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Okay, next question. Let's just keep this one simple. What is your dream starting five for next season? Now, for you, James, you don't really, and I don't mean this like you don't care, but you don't care because you're going to cover the team either way. So I guess maybe this one's more for me, no?
Yeah, you can answer it, and then I will give one that I think could be super intriguing. Are we going to work under the assumption they got Victor in this? Are we going to work under the assumption?
I'm not.
Oh, you're not? Okay, go ahead.
That's not my dream lineup.
Okay, talk your shit.
I'm going to go Cade, Scoot, Bogey, Jeremy Duren. And then on the bench, you have Ivy, Karis, Isaiah. This Stu thing's weird because I don't... It's mainly a keeping him in the second unit, so that way your bench is insane thing. It's interchangeable with him and Duren. I don't really want him playing the five anyways, so that's why I put Jalen Duren at the five, because then you have insane size in your starting five.
Which Isaiah on the bench, both?
Well, both, of course.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't say them in the starting five, so both of them.
But I didn't know if you were going to – I didn't know if Livers would make your
– He would be the three in the second unit.
So you're
right?
So
and
Burks
Karis
is,
would
you
be
traded
the two.
Burks. You traded Burks.
Yeah, remember he's getting the what did I say a few weeks ago that we're trading him for like the 42nd pick in the draft or something?
Okay. All right, this is yours. This is your fapping scenario.
Yeah, okay, go so ahead. Wait, what is that bench then? So Ivy, Karis.
You just got rid of Killian. Your French Connection shirt's gone.
Oh my god.
I
hate this question.
A relic. You gotta finish it.
Can I change the starting five? Can I change
that we
didn't? Okay, cool. So we're going to instead go, no, I can't, because this is what I want to happen. Truthfully, this is what I want to happen. But then you don't get to keep RJ Hampton, which I've kind of wanted to ask you a question about RJ Hampton on the show. So please don't let me forget to do that.
All right, yeah. Let's hear your 10.
Let's just start from the top again. I'm sorry, everybody. So you would have Cade, Scoot, Bogey, Jeremy, Duren. That's five. Jaden Ivey, I have to kick out Caris LeVert. Killian Hayes, no. Caris LeVert, Isaiah Livers, Isaiah Stewart, and then Bagley or Wiseman, take your pick.
Okay.
There's your 10.
So Burks is still gone.
Burks is gone for, well, you said we need more picks. We're stuck in the cupboard with second round picks.
All right. I think the most intriguing and most enticing would be Cade, Ivy, Wembanyama, Stewart, Duren.
You're crazy.
And you go big. Wemby's gonna be a 3-4.
Yeah, what do you put him on all NBA? What is he gonna, I don't mean to get him ahead of myself here and be like, do you think so?
Similar to like Porzingis, I think he's a forward, not a center.
Easily my biggest problem with the NBA right now is this facade, this illusion that positions are still real when they haven't been for like 3 years.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But I would go, Wemby, Stu, Duren, front court. You assume Stu and Wemby can space the floor. Stu's shown playmaking chops. Ivy's gotten better. Obviously, Cade is Cade. You just go big, and it kind of covers up some deficiencies for Ivy defensively. Mm-hmm. I think that would be, assuming Wemby is what we think. Yeah, I would go with that. And then off the bench,
Anthony Black. Somehow we facilitate a trade where you're able to get your guy. Do you want to plant your flag right now?
I'm an Anthony Black fan. He might just be tall Ricky Rubio, but I'm a fan. Ricky Rubio's
like
played
Tyson
a long
Daniels
time.
2.0. Similar. Tyson Daniels with a better jumper.
Yeah, his jumper's kind of gross, but Daniels isn't great either. But and then off the bench, yeah, a form of Livers, Wiseman, Bagley, Burks, Bogey. Burks, Bogey, Livers, Wiseman, Bagley.
I'm still hooked on the Wembanyama thing. Do you mind if I ask you my RJ Hampton question? I just don't want to forget this.
Yeah,
I think
go ahead.
I think it could be important. Is there anything to watch with that? Is there any world where RJ Hampton plays well enough that he carves out a legitimate role on this team? And he's only got like 20 games to do it. It's not a lot of time. Who knows where the minutes are going to come from? But is there a chance that we're looking at next season as like RJ Hampton is like a ninth guy?
Yes.
Do you want to elaborate, or do you just want to leave it?
We can elaborate. I mean, if Corey comes back, it's going to be as an end of bench like vet guy, not a rotation guy. Killian has stopped making shots again,
inexplicably.
So. If this continues, and I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe if RJ's really good to end this season, and Killian is not, probably a conversation to be had.
So. Yeah, I could absolutely I could get on board with that. I was telling you that it was one of my favorite things that Troy has done. I think just unanimously, this is like a pro fan move. Everybody wanted RJ Hampton in the draft. And at this point, it's like it didn't really work in Denver. Well, it's not that it didn't work in Denver. It was that he got traded for Aaron Gordon. And then the Orlando thing, it's like, yeah, that didn't really work. But, you know, if nothing else, the fans loved him. He's a really good locker room guy. Like capital P, bolded, italicized, underlined professional. So by all accounts, you really lose nothing by this. It's only a win-win. I really am excited to keep watching him play.
Yeah, they gave up nothing for him.
Yeah, there's a question that I apologize because I can't find what the actual question is. So I apologize to the person who wrote it in. I'm still going to read it to you from memory, and this is how we can end the mailbag. What do you think, James?
Let's do it.
They had said something to the effect of, I seem to remember James mentioning that he sold off his entire record collection. Have you started to rebuild it at all?
No, I have not. That was tough to do. But let me break it down like this. It was years and years of collecting primarily like 90s and hip hop today, a lot of jazz and R&B, and then like Bossa Nova Brazil. Like those are my favorite. When I sold off my record collection, I kept my 10 favorite albums, but, and I won't say the number on here, but the number that I was offered for the entire collection was too good to pass up. And it's like, as much as I love the aesthetic of listening to records and checking out the centerfolds and the stuff that it comes with and just the art part of it too, I just, for 7 months of the year, I'm just like never home enough to like really just like throw on, like it would, the most of the time I would throw on a record would be like, I finally have free time on Sunday morning and we're cleaning up the house.
Yeah.
Or like 100%. Late night writing and I throw something on, but it's just like, it's 2023. As much as I love the records, like I have everything on my phone, and for the number offered, I will just get rid of them and clear up some space and have shoe money. So.
Yeah, but you don't get that crackle.
Yeah, no,
I know
it's tough.
That vinyl crackle.
It's a thing. It's a thing.
I think that my favorite one that I own in terms of like, the vinyl aesthetic itself, right, not like what my actual favorite album is. Well, it's up there anyways. It's in the top like three or five. My Watch the Throne record, because the like vinyl itself is like it's like orange, like blood orange. It's incredible. Yeah. Love it so much. My favorite one that I own is an EP from the Japanese House, which is like the best individual artist of our generation. I'll ask this. you can give us your album this week by saying what record you missed the most from that collection.
That's tough because, like, what do you mean by miss? Like, I can still listen to it currently. Like, I have the internet. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, like, the, you know, you talk about how you the like aesthetic, flipping through and looking at all the yeah.
It's a great question.
Because some of those, I'm sure, were like originals. Not like even re-releases. Yeah. Like the most, I have two originals. My brother got me, which, hey, we never, happy belated birthday to Matthew. We never relayed an official birthday message to my brother on the podcast.
Happy belated, Matthew.
But he got me for Christmas a few years ago an original Toto record. That felt great.
Like and then Dorothy's Dog?
No, like the amazing band, one of the best bands of all time. Oh. And then I have Michael Jackson Off the Wall, the original.
There you go.
Yeah.
A little soul in you. Can I make two picks, like an actual pick I want people to check out, and then I'll do the record one?
Sure.
All right. So I've been on I'm always on a house kick, but like.
Just because you've been on a house kick for 5 years.
Yeah,
what do you mean?
I mean, I've been on a house. Yeah. Check out Larry Heard's album, Love's Arrival. Absolutely phenomenal. If you like house / R&B vibe house, like fire. Larry Heard. Love's Arrival. My favorite song is Praise, track one, but the whole thing's a banger. And then the album that I miss. So you know Bobby Caldwell, What You Won't Do for Love?
Yeah.
So most of my albums were LPs. So it was the whole album. But I had the 7-inch of that. First of all, one of my favorite songs of all time. Didn't know Bobby Caldwell was white until like 5 years ago. Thought he was a brother. He's white. The dude who sings What You Won't Do for Love is white. Just killed it.
Huh.
Yeah, I was shocked.
Yeah.
Definitely thought he was like a brother from Detroit for sure. No, he's like a white dude from Kansas. I don't know.
Zero melanin? Wow.
None. That's and like his album covers, it has like a shadow, so you don't know. Smart marketing though. Smart marketing because if you hear the song back then, you hear the song, there's no internet to go look them up, but you just see the shadow. And you're like, oh, this, if you're maybe an African-American consumer, like, oh, this dude's one of us. Like, he's fire. And then it's not until you go see the show, you're like, oh.
This is a cover band? Who is this guy?
Who is this guy?
Yeah.
And then you already, earned your respect because he's got the, what do they call him? Not chops. He's got chops.
It's funny because even in the, you mentioned how it's like, well, we don't have the internet. Dude, we have the internet. People didn't know for like a year after he blew up that Jack Harlow was white. I remember that being a huge
thing.
Really?
I could tell he was white. That's crazy. It's interesting. But anyway, go ahead.
That new Yeet album. How about that?
Never even heard of Yeet.
You don't know Yeet?
I don't know Yeet. I know Skeet Ball.
Yeah, I mean, that's cool, but Yeet, man.
Rap? Rock? What is it?
Yeet is like an experimental rapper, but like what he makes is like, I don't mean to sound like a total zoomer and like just talk about Yeet the way that everybody else does, but he takes all the musical risks that you as an artist would want to take, but you're like, there's literally, I can't do this. This is just going to sound stupid, but he just does it, man. Sure. He just does it. He's got great like ADHD brain music.
Let me Google him. Yeet.
Yeah. He's like 20. He's like a kid. He's awesome.
But what I was saying about the Bobby Caldwell is that 7-inch came heart-shaped in red. It was really cool. Ooh. Yeah, I found that. I feel like Yeet, he's a rapper? R-E-E-T?
No, Y-E-A-T.
Y? Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Yeet. Like Yeet.
Oh, I see him. Is he from London?
No, he's American. Dude, it's not even... Here's the thing, is UK rap, and I don't even just mean drill, but
he's
drill
from
is
Portland.
Great. Yeah, he's a great dude.
Oh,
UK rap is like my favorite thing, dude. It doesn't even have to be drill. It's just all so good.
They actually rap. That's the thing.
And the coolest thing is the words that they get away with saying that makes that like that sound cool. Like they say darling all the time, but it sounds cool. You know what I mean?
My favorite thing that they say, and it's very vulgar, and I would, it, but when they talk a lot about shanking in UK rap, but it's like, what's the word that they use? Not poker, but
sticking.
Sticking. There's another word that I'm.
Are you talking about like the Central C video where he was like freestyling and giving a bunch of slang? Because that was great.
A lot of UK rappers, like, they'll say, not poking or sticking. Like, it's like a very UK. I can't think of it right now off the top of my head, but there's like.
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. The way they say. Hold on. UK rap. Let's hold on. I just typed in UK rap stabbing slang.
Put on a list.
Gosh, I can't. It's going to bother me, and I'm going to remember it as soon as I can. But, yeah, let's not spend too much time on the slang word for stabbing. But there's the way they do say things, yes, there is a cool little sound to it. It definitely hits.
Did you find any, like, when you were in France and you were speaking French, did you try to put a little inflection on it, a little zest? You
know I thought I was. I thought I was. And then every time I went to the same cafe every day, and I had, like, my parlez-vous anglais. Hold on. I had my standard thing because I was told you got to try to at least speak French and they'll be able to, right, and they'll respect you. Let me tell you guys, I don't know if I said this on the pod. Let me tell you guys.
You did, but you can say it again.
Okay. Every time I went somewhere in Paris, bonjour, désolé, parlez-vous anglais? Hey, sorry, do you speak English?
Where are the snails?
Facts. Where are the Newports? And I guess I didn't do it well enough because, like, the second day, the same chick was at the cafe. I don't know if she was hitting on me or not. Wish she was. She was bad. She was beautiful. Make sure my door's closed. She laughed as soon as I said it. But she's like, yes. They understood what I said, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that was the one thing I was always really nervous about, because when I was in high school, I took Spanish really seriously. It was, like, the only class that I took really seriously. I loved Spanish. And I was supposed to, for my senior year, I was supposed to be in AP Spanish. And during that, you go to, like, I don't remember if it's like Costa Rica or like the Dominican Republic. I don't remember where it is that we were supposed to go for like a class trip. But the entire purpose was to, like, you know, go out in the shit and use the language and speak with locals and, like, you know, really use all the tools that we've given you. And then I dropped out and didn't get to do that. But the one thing that I was always really nervous about was the inflection, because, like, I don't want to sound like I'm trying too hard when I'm speaking Spanish, but I also don't want to sound like an American. Like, I don't want it to be an Americanized, you know, version of Spanish.
There's a line you have to walk, or you hope to walk. Not that you have to walk, but you hope to walk. You hope to not insult them, but still not sound too American.
I spent like 2 hours a day for like a month trying to learn Ukrainian. And let me tell you something, dude, it's like the hardest. I don't understand it. Like, this, I don't get it. And then I was also told, I was reading an article because I was like, what are the easiest languages for an English, a native English speaking person to learn? And they were like Swedish, hands down. And then I looked into it a little bit, did some research. No shot. No shot. That's easy. It looked really, really hard. There are a lot of syllables. And then like Welsh was another one that I was like, what are all these vowels? What's going on here, guys?
Yeah, it's weird. Like, when you go to other countries and you hear them speak fluently, you're like, gosh, first of all, it just sounds like they're saying nothing.
Nothing.
Just gibberish. But then it's like, I feel like our language, and again, it's because I'm born into it, is super easy.
It's so hard. It's so hard to learn English. 2-2-2.
Yeah, it's wild.
Things like that. Yeah. There are so many double entendres and like different ways to use verbiage. And English is a really tough language, and it's obviously just natural to us. I'm not going to say it's the hardest because I don't even think that's true, but it is hard.
Yeah.
It's definitely hard.
It is.
This took a weird turn, James. Such is life here at the Bunny Cardigan Show.
That's what we
do. I guess I'll save my Keith Nichols spiel for next week when we have him on the show. Alrighty, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, I don't even know if he's doing like. He kind of took that route that everybody takes when they're out of their league dreams don't work.
Was he work? And he's at, like a work at Enterprise Rent-A-Car.
Close. So that's a good one. So like car salesman is one of them. Or, what's another one?
Like insurance, not insurance, but
like a financial advisor.
Yeah, or like United Wholesale Mortgage.
There's another really big one. Maybe that's what it. Well, you said mortgage, so I'm assuming. I was gonna say realtor is the other big one.
Is it? I thought it was more like they sell insurance.
Well, there's a few big ones.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Keith Nichols doing like all five of those things. It's weird.
I haven't thought about Keith Nichols in a long. Yeah, save it for next week. Give people a reason to come back.
All the time. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate 5 stars. Leave a review. Subscribe if you're feeling generous. If you're listening to this on Spotify, you can also leave 5 stars. We will catch you guys in the next one.
Peace.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.